11-year MLS pro Quincy Mariquois here, and you're now listening to The Perfect Soccer Podcast, where your host goes one-on-one to get to know your favorite professional soccer players, both on and off the pitch. Because how better to learn what it takes to become a pro soccer player other than directly from pro soccer players? Today's episode is brought to you by PerfectSoccerSkills.com, the number one and only platform you'll ever need to connect with and learn from pro soccer players. Learn more and enter to win weekly soccer prizes, goals, balls, jerseys, player meet and greets, and more by heading over to PerfectSoccerSkills.com/PSTM to enter to win for free today. With that said, please enjoy today's episode.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Perfect Soccer Podcast. Our special guest today is Nick Pereira. Nick, how's it going?
Here we are. So far, so good. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no, I appreciate you coming on. Let's just go back in time a little bit, or a lot of bit. What's your first memory of playing soccer?
Ooh, a lot of bit. Now you're really aging me here. I think I used to play with my dad all the time and mess around with him and with the ball. And we were always playing in the backyard. And I feel like at first I remember him telling me to play soccer and I didn't really want to. I was kind of like resistant, like I think most kids are when you try something new that you're not really sure about. Mm-hmm. And then I remember going to a soccer team. I was probably 5 or 6, being part of a club. And I remember being caught in a 5v2 in the middle and like not really understanding what was going on. And I was probably in the middle for like 10 minutes. Like I didn't know how to get out of the 5v2. Like I just kept keeping it away from me. So I remember that experience. And instead of being like, I hate this, I was like, oh, I want to be one of the guys that's on the outside that doesn't lose the ball and makes me chase. So I remember just kind of being hooked in really, really quickly.
Yeah. And then just going into your high school career, and what was your recruiting process like?
Yeah, it was a weird one because we were in Europe, so we didn't really know. I didn't really understand what college soccer was. I had no idea. I just, for me, it was either I'm going to go to university in England or come to the US. And in the US, they had this hybrid soccer university model that was really cool because in England, I would have had to stop playing soccer. I went to a soccer camp at Santa Barbara the summer before I ended up going there. Mm-hmm. And we visited it, and then the campus was amazing. And we were like, yeah, this works. And I had no idea how serious college soccer was. So I sent in a bunch of videos to to the head coach for the Santa Barbara. He probably looked in for 2 seconds and was like, this is unwatchable. Cause at the time it was like my dad with a camcorder, right? Like now everyone's got like VO and you can go track the ball and every movement and every touch. At the time it was literally my dad sitting out in Belgium in a rainy day that you can barely see, and the thing's wobbling. And so they probably didn't even watch it. I went to the camp and I did really well at the camp, and they were like, oh yeah, you should come back next year and do the camp. And I think they just really wanted me to sign up and pay for the camp again the next year. Mm-hmm. But I was already accepted into the school. So I was already there, and I did the camp again the year that I was going to start school. And then they were like, oh, you should do preseason with us with the D1 squad. See how it goes. And I remember I only lasted about a week because physically I just couldn't do it. Like the physical demand of college soccer was so crazy. Mm-hmm. I don't even think we touched the ball maybe like 5 times in that week. And I literally was any muscle that I could possibly have was pulled, you know, I couldn't even walk. So they were like laughing at me. They were like, you were probably the most unfit player that ever show up for preseason in America. Right. Cause I just, as a European, we didn't know what the demand was. Yeah. So I played on the club team my first quarter, and it was the quarter that they went to the championship game in 2004, the D1 squad at Santa Barbara, and lost in the final in penalties to Indiana. So it was then, as soon as that quarter ended, I was, you know, part of the team starting in spring and all that. So it was kind of a funny story.
Yeah, that's crazy. And then what was it like? You grew up mostly in Belgium, right?
Yeah.
And what was that like just moving to America? Was that like a culture shock?
My mom's from the US, and so we have family here, and so we visited a lot. but mm-hmm. I think that living in the US is very different than visiting. I mean, it's like when you go to a, you know, you go to a on vacation with your family and you're like, oh my God, this place was beautiful, but yeah. you've only been there for literally a week and you get all the good stuff. You don't get any of the, you know, day to day. So it was a culture shock for sure. And I think it's still, I've been here now, I've lived here longer than I have, than I lived in Europe, but I still feel like there's culture shocks for me every day living in the States of just things that I can't either get on board with or I can't understand. So it was a culture shock for me and it was a big one. I was 18. So it was like my formative years, you know, you're coming into like that moment. So a lot of surprises and a lot of differences in the way that people talk to each other, the daily interactions, just so many things.
Yeah. And you speak six languages.
Yeah.
So how'd you learn six, and like, what was your first two, I guess?
Yeah. So my dad is from Spain. My mom's from the US. And so they speak to each other in Spanish. So mm-hmm. I talk to my dad in Spanish, speak to my mom in English all the time. And my mom was a simultaneous translator. So she can speak English and Spanish as she used to do it in conferences and things. So we spoke two languages at home. And then we lived in Belgium, and Belgium has the national languages are French and Dutch. So there you go. Two more. Mm-hmm. And then Italian and Portuguese, I kind of picked up later in life. And I don't know that I would pass a fluency test if I were to go, but if I go to Italy, I speak in Italian to everybody and it's pretty good Italian. And if I'm with Brazilians or Portuguese people, I speak in Portuguese and it's pretty good Portuguese. But if I was forced to write an essay in those languages, I don't know if I would pass, but they're pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah, no, for sure. And how much has that helped you like in soccer? Cause obviously soccer is the biggest sport in the world.
I think it's like a cheat code, to be honest with you, because I think one of the things that really goes sort of unnoticed is the social integration between players. So like the ability to go into a team that you don't know a lot of people and be able to integrate into their like little social club. It just makes them want to play with you more if they feel like they can have something in common with you, right? Like any player who's played soccer for a long time has had to play with a bunch of different groups and different people, different places, different things. And when you can connect with them in a language, or they can tell that you're trying to connect with them in their language, it makes it so much easier. So I do think it's like a cheat code. Yeah.
Is anyone ever shocked that you know like their language?
All the time. Yeah, all the time. People are still shocked when I speak Spanish. They can't see it. It doesn't make sense to them. There's a 6'4" white guy talking in Spanish. It doesn't add up. I always get like the, wait a minute. So all the time.
Gotcha. I think going back to UC Santa Barbara, what was your time like there on and off the pitch? And then I know you guys won the national championship in 2006.
Yeah, I think it was an amazing experience. You know, I was very lucky. I met my wife there. So that was the coolest thing ever, right? To be able to meet somebody and start a family. So that was incredible. I mean, looking back at it now, I didn't do a whole lot of studying. I probably should have done way more. And that's one of the regrets I have is like, I should have taken that time to really get something cool and do it like a double major or a major with a minor. And at the time I was so zoned in and honed in on soccer that I really didn't care about studies other than just making sure I had enough of a grade to keep doing what I was doing. So my GPA going out was not amazing. It was like a 3-something, but my senior quarter, when I actually cared a bit more, I was like a 4.0 student, and I really wish I would have done that all the time. Mm-hmm. But in terms of the social life, it was amazing. I mean, what an incredible campus, right? It's so cool. Mm-hmm. Anyone who's ever been there is like falls in love with the city, made some amazing friends. I think grew a lot as a human there because it was the first time that I was far from my family. And so there's just a lot of growth there. It was cool. It was cool. The soccer was incredible. I didn't know what to expect. I went through a full roller coaster of everything, you know, from not making the team to playing on the club team, to making the team, to winning a national championship, to having a bad junior year, to having a good senior year, to going to the MSL combine or MLS combine. I had all of it, you know.
And you're the most outstanding player in the tournament.
Yeah. And having come from a walk-on,
that's,
you know,
that's crazy. Like, yeah. So how did that go in terms of like getting a scholarship? Did you have the scholarship before that or it was after the scholarship?
Yeah. So actually I didn't get anything. It's pretty fun. It's, you know, I didn't have any scholarship at all because I was a walk-on, right? And that wasn't a thing. So we won the national championship. I had a really good back end of the season, I wasn't playing a lot. And then I actually kind of went to my coach and was like, listen, if you're not going to play me, San Diego State, where my family lives in San Diego, they would love for me to transfer. And I'll go there. You know, I would love to go there. I've got some friends to play there. If you're, I'm not going to play, don't worry about it. I'll go play somewhere else.
Yeah.
And then I started playing a little bit in the games. And then I had a couple like really good games, and that kind of allowed me to make a little bit of a jump where now when there was some subs, I would actually get into the field as opposed to being the guy on the bench who kept looking down at the coach, like, are you going to put me on? And he'd be like, no. I started playing. And then as I got later into my career, then yeah, I was lucky that they would help me out with some school, that I had some scholarship stuff coming in. But at the beginning, it was not. We were not only were we not getting scholarships, we were paying out-of-state fees for the first year because we were a non-California resident. So yeah. It was, yeah, I don't know how my parents did it, but
that's crazy. Like, you got to, like, walk on to win a national champion and be, like, the MVP of the tournament.
Like, my coach, like, tells the story all the time as, like, a badge of honor of, like, oh, look at how good of a job we do that we found this kid. I always think to myself, well, whatever. I always think to myself, you could have had this way earlier had you not been so short-sighted and blindsided by fitness, right? Like, which is now looking at it. And now what we know is, like, you can always get somebody fitter. You can't make them a better soccer player. Well, you can make them a little bit better, but incremental. But you can get somebody fitter. So at the time, it was a really hard one for me because, you know, someone tells you you're unfit, you can't be on this team, we don't want you as a part of it. And you're like, well, but I'm a better soccer player than a lot of these people. And that can't you see that? And so it was a really crazy story. Yeah.
For sure. And then what about, I guess, what was your aspirations to always go pro?
I don't think it was. I mean, I always wanted to as a kid, right? Like, I always wore like Fernando Torres jerseys, Ronaldo jerseys, and was like, oh, I want to be this guy, right? But I never actually thought it was real.
Yeah.
It wasn't until probably that national championship game and we won where I was starting to get phone calls from people in the MLS about like, hey, maybe Generation Adidas and the U20 national team coach is looking at you. But I couldn't be part of the U20s because I was technically 20 because I was a sophomore as a junior, right? Like, I was 1 year older than that. I was a junior playing sophomore season. So then I kind of saw that it was possible, and I kind of dove in head first on it. But honestly, like, I talk about this to my parents and my wife all the time. I couldn't be happier that I didn't play in the MLS. And that sounds really like silly, but it allowed me to really focus on making kind of a multifaceted area of my life. Like, I have a wife and a family, which I'm so excited about. I have been coaching since I was 22 years old. I've been getting all kinds of business degrees and involvements with like high level organizations because I've been working in parallel to playing MASL, indoor, beach soccer, and all these things. And I've allowed to kind of live a double life where a lot of the MLS players, unfortunately for them, have been caught in this sort of whirlwind where they're stuck in this one thing and it's really hard for them to get out. So I, again, at the time, not being drafted, they cut the reserve league. So there was no supplemental draft. There was only the first draft, was like this, you know, soul crushing moment. But now looking back, I think it was the best thing that could have ever happened to me.
Yeah. No, that's a great point. Like, just athletes in general, like, you know, they're at the major league levels and then they just don't really know what to do after, even if, no matter what, like the highest of the high and the lowest of the low on the roster.
Yeah. And it's tough because, you know, if you want to start a family, which I always knew my wife and I always knew we wanted to have, is, you know, you might be having a great season in Nashville and then Cincinnati calls and they said, you're traded to Cincinnati. And then halfway through you're traded to Dallas and then halfway through you're traded to Montreal. And it's a tough one where it's like, I don't know that the sustainability you can offer your family or the routine that you can offer them is really conducive for a good lifestyle. But again, everybody's on their own personal journey. And again, I couldn't be happier with the way mine's gone.
Enjoy learning what it takes to become a better player from professional soccer players? Well, how would you like to work with professional players one-on-one? Now you can with Be Pro by Perfect Soccer. Head over to perfectsoccerskills.com/BEPRO to apply to work with our network of pro players today.
Yeah, no, for sure. And you're killing it. How did you, I guess, then transitioning out of, I don't know, like outside soccer, how did you get into indoor soccer and then beach soccer as well?
Yeah, so indoor soccer started in San Diego. A lot of the guys that actually played at San Diego State, Craig Childs is one who played for the San Diego Soccers, has played for the Soccers for a really long time. They started playing indoor while I was in Spain. I was playing a pro outdoor contract in Spain. The team stopped paying me like 4 months into the season, which happened a lot in Spain at that time. Actually, I don't think it still happens as much, but it does happen sometimes. So I said, you know what? I think I'm done with this outdoor experience and I'm going to go find something else. So I ended up going back home to San Diego where my parents live. And there was these San Diego Soccers team, this indoor team. And I just was training with them and playing some exhibition games. And, I did well. I had played all through college on an indoor team with a lot of those guys, but it was just like a kind of a semi-pro team. Mm-hmm. And I was pretty good at indoor. And so I just started playing it for fun. And then all of a sudden kind of one thing led to another. And I went to a futsal trial, through the soccer, somebody put me up for an indoor futsal tryout with Keith Tozer, who was a futsal national team coach. He wanted me to go out and play in Milwaukee for him, which was like the big leagues in indoor. And then through that, I got into a beach soccer national team event. And then it just kind of all started snowballing together. And my game is so much more conducive to the smaller sided soccer that I was able to really kind of elevate and shine. And whereas outdoor soccer, I was a good player. I was good, but I had massive weaknesses in my games that were highlighted in my game that are highlighted in outdoor soccer. In the small sided, they weren't highlighted as much. So, I started kind of climbing the ranks and doing that and really loving every step of it. And I got to play with some amazing teams, some really cool coaches. And obviously having represented the national team, that was a jersey US soccer made for me for my 100th goal for US soccer, which is a fairly rare event in men's soccer, especially. There's nobody who's done it. So, really cool.
Yeah, that's crazy. I was literally just about to ask you what it was like to represent the USA, but, you kind of already answered that.
It's really cool. It's something I still do. There's a lot of tough things about US soccer, about, how we're compensated because we aren't. So it's really tough because you've had to make life sacrifices to represent the national team, which kind of shouldn't be the way it goes.
Yeah.
But, it's been so cool. I've been able to travel so many places, captain the national team now for 9 years. I mean, it's incredible. I'm really lucky. I've got 92 caps, I think, for beach national team. So coming up on 100 soon.
Yeah, and you have over 100 goals. And how many MVPs have you won? 2 or 3?
In indoor?
Yeah.
2.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So
what was that like to be named twice the MVP?
Yeah, it was cool. I mean, it was a really hard game. There's some really good players. So it's a big honor to be involved at that level. And, the years that I did win it, it was like categorically, I was so far above the competition in terms of points and all that it was like it was almost a foregone conclusion, right? Like it was almost like, okay, I don't think there's a way that I can't win this. But it's still so cool to finally see your name on it. And it's so cool to know that all the other people in the league voted and agreed that you were the best player. And I've been really lucky, like I said, with an amazing team in Tacoma that I kind of found that I won both MVPs with them. I found a group of guys that really like get me and get me as a player and highlight me as well. And they know how to play with me, which makes me a better player. Some players are better on teams that are really bad because it allows them to do more. Some players are whatever. I've always needed good players around me to make me better. So it's been really cool. Yeah. I mean, it's been amazing. And I'm hopefully not done winning MVPs. So yeah. I don't think I'm done yet.
Right, maybe I just manifested a third one. So
I'm fine with that. I'm fine with that.
And yeah, tell me a bit, how did you get on Sneaky Fox for the soccer tournament?
Yeah, I mean, Lamar Nagel, who's a friend of mine, played in the MLS a long time, played with us in the Stars, just called me one day randomly and was like, hey, listen, I've got this guy called Mike McGee. You might know his name. He's looking for some players to put together a team for this team called Sneaky Fox. And I'd gotten a call from Newtown Pride because a lot of the indoor players were on that team. It was a, like almost all indoor team. Mm. And I was going to go with them originally, but again, to be honest with you, I wasn't sure this $1 million tournament thing was happening. Like, I don't think anybody was. Like, there was kind of like, yeah, it's not going to happen, right? So Lamar called me and was like, listen, it's a really cool group of dudes. I can't go, but it's all MLS, ex-MLS pros. And I think some of them. I played against, Quincy in college. I played against Steve Lenhart in college. I played against a lot of these dudes, Stan Cronin in college. So I think them, and they want to talk to you. And so I, you know, he linked me up with a text with Mike and we chatted for like 30 minutes. First time I ever called him. And I was like, I'm in. Yeah. Let's do it. He's like, I can't pay you and this and that, but it's going to be great. You're going to have a good time. And I was like, all right, let's do it. It's awesome. Yeah. And it was an amazing experience and an incredible group of humans. That's like, that was the coolest part of it, was like everybody on that team was like a really cool dude.
Yeah.
Super fun to hang out with, really good team bonding. So super worth it. It was amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I was watching it all. It was funny just cause like at first, they didn't really give you guys credit and it was weird. Cause like they knew like all pretty much like everyone's a pro and stuff. And then all of a sudden they were like, yo, they're the favorite after like the second game. And I was like, what? Like you guys are just like, it was weird. And then, yeah. So then you were, I mean, I'd say you were the MVP of the team, just killing, I don't know how many goals you had, but it was a lot. But yeah, what was that? What was that like too? Just like even you for playing all those years and obviously all these MVPs and indoor, but like you were getting like so much exposure, like on ESPN and NBC and all that.
Yeah. I thought it was amazing. I mean, you know, the same sort of trajectory of like down up that I had in college is what my experience in soccer has always been. Mm-hmm. I'm a big dude. I'm not fast. So people see me play and they kind of, their initial reaction is like not terribly impressed. Yeah. And then it kind of goes up from there. And honestly, the tournament started the same. Like the tournament started, I wasn't playing. The first game we played against Zala, Mike was like, listen, I'm going to put you on the bench, but don't worry, we'll get you in. And it was kind of like that vibe. Mm-hmm. And then I came in and had an assist. And then I came in and had a goal. And then it kind of, it was like, oh, okay, well, maybe you should play a bit more. So it was really cool. And the media exposure to it was incredible. I mean, one of the best marketed tournaments I've ever been a part of and really well organized. And obviously it's on Peacock and all the stuff. So they did an amazing job. Yeah, it was really
cool. Even like when you mentioned, you were like, you didn't know it was happening. Like same thing, like me and Quincy were like looking at the socials, like no, it was like dead. And then all of a sudden, like you guys got there and then it was just like everything blew up and we were like, yeah, this is cool.
It was amazing. I mean, they did an incredible job. And like I said, it was like the event of the year. I mean, I've been in soccer in the U.S. since 2004 or five, I guess.
Yeah.
I've never been to a tournament that's more professionally organized, higher exposure. The guys are legitimately having fun. Like all those MLS guys were there. They were like, I played 10 years in the MLS. This was 10 times more fun than anything I ever did in the MLS. Like, that's so cool.
Even as like a fan, like I thought it was like more fun to watch just in general, like. Just in general. Yeah,
shorter games, right? You've got the target score time, the whole thing. It was really cool.
Yeah, the target score was dope because, like, even like you saw a team, I forgot what team it was, but I think they were down like 4-1 and they came back. Yeah. Or something. Like,
Zala. It was that Zala team that had AJ De La Garza and a couple of that XMLS players, too.
That was nuts. All right, let me last five Quincy questions, and then we'll get you out of here so you can run through these fast. What's the most important skill or quality you think made you successful as a pro?
I would say there's two, but I would say technical ability and development, like my ability to play in tight spaces, my want and my desire to be a technical soccer player, despite my build, right? Like most people my size don't focus on that. And then the other one I would say is like perseverance, like just being arrogant enough to know that you're good and being like, no, I have something, I got to keep with it, as opposed to being like, no, somebody told me no, so that must mean I suck. Being like, well, okay, I know I have something. There's something here that I have, I can do, and keeping at it.
Gotcha. What's the biggest mistake you think pros are making?
It's a tough one. The biggest mistake pros are making. I think, again, I'm going to use my own experience as this, but I think that diving full into, you know, the pro life too early and not understanding what they want in life as a longer career, or like, you know, very few soccer players are ever going to be able to retire off of soccer. It's like that 0.1% at the top or whatever. So understanding what you want for your next step to be and carefully preparing for that. And I think that as humans, we get sucked into the ego of what we're doing and we think it's really cool and big time and we like dive in. I did it in college. I thought that like playing D1 soccer was like the thing. And so I dove all into it and never sort of pulled out and looked at it from the top. So I would say the mistake they're making is being too invested and involved in what's happening in the right now in their professional careers and not looking at it as a more holistic conversation.
Yeah, no, definitely. This next one could kind of tie into what you just said, but like, what advice would you give to a younger player?
Man, the advice I would give to a younger player is don't stop working on your technical ability. right? Like, don't rely on one thing. I'm really fast. I'm really strong. Always improve. Watch people that you think are like you and play like you and emulate some of the stuff they do. Pick up things from somebody else's game and look at the larger picture of what you're doing in life and make sure it makes you happy on all levels, as opposed to just being like, I'm playing in the MLS for a minimum contract. This is so cool. I'm part of an MLS squad. And then foregoing all these other opportunities that may make you happy or bring more to the table than just what you're doing right now.
Yeah, definitely. All right. These next two could be life related or soccer related. Okay. What is something most people think is true that you believe isn't?
Money buys happiness.
All right, I like that. What is something you would move forward with if you weren't scared of what would happen if things didn't go well?
Starting my own soccer brand or company, doing something that's like, I believe that indoor soccer, futsal, and beach soccer as a technical development tool are like the three things that you'd need to do. And I think MLS teams are crazy for not involving those three as part of their technical development plan. I would love to create a company that does them for the MLS or for one of the top leagues and does youth development. But I'm afraid to do it because if you throw all your money and efforts into that and it doesn't work out, what are you going to do next? So that's probably it.
Wow, that's dope. I appreciate this. Is it soccer or football?
I don't know. I would, when I'm with my friends in Europe, it's football. So it's even more. When I'm with my dad in Spain, it's football. And if I'm here and I say that, I just sound like Giada, the lady who does the cooking show that says Parmigiana, you know, instead of it's just like, yeah, but you're speaking in English. It's Parmesan, you know, whatever. So soccer, probably soccer.
All right, Nick. Well, I appreciate you coming on and can do with the listeners where they can follow you at on social media.
Yeah. Thanks very much, man. Pleasure.
Quincy Mariquois here, and thanks again for listening. If you enjoyed today's episode, please be sure to share it with someone you feel will get some value from it. And if you could take a moment to leave a review of our podcast wherever you're listening and let us know who you'd like us to interview next, we'll get working on that right away. You can listen to this full episode and more at perfectsoccerskills.com/radio. That's perfectsoccerskills.com/RADIO. You can also enter to win free weekly soccer prizes, goals, balls, jerseys, player meet and greets, and more by heading over to perfectsoccerskills.com/PSTM to enter to win for free today.